Welcome to the mundane festival. Welcome to the Negro League. Sign your name on the blacklist and know this is American history. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Mundane Festival podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lambert. Today is Sunday, February 25th, 2018. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, and on Podbean, the host site. If you like this show, please rate and review it on iTunes and or Stitcher. Give it a 5-star review. Let everyone know why you like it, because it will make me feel good about myself and most of the life decisions that I've made so far. You can email the show at mundanefestivalpod@gmail.com. Let me know what's on your mind. More importantly, what's on your heart? You can like the show on Facebook. You can follow it on Twitter at Mundane Festival. And you can follow me, your host, the guy talking to you right now, on Twitter at Chris Lambert. This is episode 266. Have a super special return guest. He's my movie guy, Tim Hall, a.k.a. the People's Critic. We're gonna talk to him in a bit. I just wanna hang out with you for a bit before I take you to Tim, our super special return guest, resident. What do you call a guy like Tim and a guy like Jeff Cerulli? You know, they're just the film guys. They're the guys that I reach out to when I want to talk about film, when I want to nerd out about these things. And, you know, that's who they are. Aisha's a part of that crew, too. That's like my, I guess you could say that they're my Tim, Jeff, Tim Hall, Jeff Cerulli, Aisha Harris. They are like my McLaughlin group of film critics. And I can bounce stuff off of them, and they give really good insight. So Tim is a part of that triumvirate, if you will. So I'm going to share that conversation with you in a bit. Right now I'm sitting here in my apartment, just finished talking to him. And so this is once again, hot off the MP3 presses. I tripped myself up a week ago saying something like that, and I should have learned from last week. But, So sitting here doing the intro, last week was pretty fun. Like last weekend, I started off by doing, I went to a wedding, went to, my good friend, Brandon Collins. Him and his lovely wife, Tatiana, got married, and it was beautiful. I was down in, Long Island City, had a great time. And it gave me hope. It gave me hope that love could one day happen for me. It was a really beautiful occasion, and it definitely gave me hope, and it was I was happy to be a part of their special day. So shout out to them. Then later on that night, I had to hustle back home and get ready to do a show at the Knitting Factory in Williamsburg, and it was packed. Like that show's it's a popular show. It's one of the most popular shows in the New York City area. But I think it was even more packed because a lot of people didn't have to go to work the next day, which was President's Day. Everyone would be on holiday. And my God, it was fun. So much fun doing that show. It's always a pleasure. I hadn't done that show in about almost 2 years. So I made my triumphant return back to the Knitting Factory and had a great time. Kenny DeForest hosted. Clark Jones and Will Miles were out of town. So Kenny hosted himself, and kicked it off really nice, really fun. Just really smooth, and just enjoyed that. And I got to get my Fat Boy Corner on afterwards. There's this place called Emmy Squared, which I think they have two locations, but there's one. The main location is in Brooklyn, and it was about to close, and they took my order, so I just did like a takeout thing. But had this Detroit style pizza. I put a picture of it up on my Instagram. It's really good. Like it's good. Like that's a, I mean, you can't really fuck up pizza, but some people do it, but you can't really fuck it up. But it was really good. I took a picture of that and posted it. It was worth, it's like one of those places I've been following on Instagram for like 2 years. And I just never either don't think about it or I never, or I don't want to spend a shit ton of money, on pizza. And, either way, I finally made it there. It's good. If you ever find yourself in Williamsburg, it's worth checking out. They have other food too. What else do I want to talk about? So that was fun. Had an audition for a pilot that was pretty much, it was an adventure. This was Thursday. I got a call to MC at Levity Live, and I was, on my lunch break, and I got a text, and I was like, oh, sure, love to, I'll be there. Then I had an audition in Lower Manhattan, which is the Battery Park area, and I had to drive from Westchester to Lower Manhattan, and that took like over an hour, and it was brutal, and I was running late, and I just told my manager, just tell him I'm gonna be late. Oh my God, it was insane. So I finally get to the building, and they're like, you got to go around because there's like some water damage and stuff that happens. So you got to go around. It's like, Jesus. So I did that, and you had to wait for the elevator. And then I was just running late. I finally got to the elevator, and there's this one woman who was, I think she might have been, she's a Latina, Puerto Rican girl, beautiful. You just forget. I don't forget just how many beautiful women there are, and let alone like New York City, but then in show business. And there was this one woman, this beautiful black woman. I was just looking at her. I was just like, "Fuck you," you know? Like, what are you doing looking at her? No, that shouldn't be. Not in a bad like I hated her or anything, but she was just really beautiful. Just beautiful people that, all right, anyway, so I'm struggling to get to this audition, and I got there all to say two lines as a cab driver, and it's just for like less than 5 minutes. Like you're in the waiting room, and the time it took me to sign, it took more time for me to sign in on an iPad than to just say the two lines. I would love to get it. If I got the part, that would be awesome. But it's a lot, guys. It's a lot of the struggle that you have to go through as an artist. But it was cool. I was glad to be in the room and glad to be asked to be in the room. And yeah, so it was cool. So then I had to drive all the way back up. Now, if you live in New York City, if you live in the New York area, you know how brutal it is. Like when you try to go, not only going all the way down to Lower Manhattan during rush hour, and then to go all the way back up to Rockland County to the suburbs, that took over an hour. So there was 2 hours of driving, to which would normally be like maybe an hour if there wasn't any traffic. It was just a lot. It was a lot. So I had to go do a show, and I emceed for Godfrey at Levity Live. My God, that guy's a fucking beast. He's so good. He's so funny. Like, he's one of those guys where it's like, yeah, this guy's a professional comic and he tours. He's a funny guy. But I didn't really know much of his stuff. Like, I kind of seen some of his special and whatnot, but it's just like, okay, yeah, Godfrey, good comic. But that guy, just seeing him live, he's a fucking, he had at least 20 minutes on Black Panther, and was just like, oh, he was so good. He was so fun. Just a real fun. And he talked about it like throughout his whole set. He was talking about some real like racial black shit. Like one, he says had some Trump stuff. And at one point, the crowd was like, whoa, 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 whoa. And he was like, yo. And he got on him for that, too. And just really funny, just a really, really fucking dope comic. So I was glad to, I wish I could have worked with him the whole weekend, but it was, I think I was just filling in for somebody. But it was good to get to watch. It's like getting to work at a club like Levity Live, which is an A room, and it's where touring headliners come in and to perform. And what I've been like for the past 6 years of my young career as a comedian, it's great to watch these headliners because it's basically like auditing a class, and you just go. And I was talking to some other comics yesterday, and we were just like, yeah, it's like, you know, when you're opening for somebody, no matter, regardless of where they are in their career, how many credits they have or whatever, like, it's great to, because you get to learn. It's what it is. It's like auditing a class. So enough of the nerd stuff. We're going to stay on the nerd stuff. I beat Uncharted 4, you guys. I finally beat Uncharted. I finished the 1 through 4. Now so I started Lost Legacy. I only played it for about an hour. But it's a good series. It's really good. It just kind of became like, I think the way that I played these games, like, cause even though it was spread out over the course of a few months, I looked at the receipt from when I bought all four of those games, and it was April of 2017, and I just now beat it in February of 2018. So off and on, I was playing. I don't think I was playing that. I had to have bought that after I beat Horizon Zero Dawn. Horizon Zero Dawn took a little over a month because that came out late February of last year. And so that took me about a month to beat, like a bunch, like a, it took a long, like that's, that game is over 20, that's got to be over 20 hours of gameplay, but that's an open world game. And so Uncharted, God, I'm trying to think what else I had. Maybe I would have had 2K. Either way, it took me a while to play. Like, I spread it out over a course of almost a year. So to beat all the, I beat all those games. And now I have to, now Brandon, shout out to Brandon again, he let me borrow Lost Legacy. And once I, when I got to 4, I was like, I said it on the show, like how beautiful it looks. This one, Lost Legacy looks, it's just amazing looking. So it just keeps getting me more and more excited about The Last of Us Part 2. And if it comes out, like, my God, if it comes out this year, like, that's, I don't know. I'm just going to have to, I might have to use a personal day when that comes out to just, like, take it in. I cannot be at work while everybody's talking about that shit. I'm not doing that. But anyway, Lost Legacy, I got to finish that. But based on the walkthrough, like with the walkthrough of on YouTube, it's like 5.5 hours. So it might be something I could finish in one sitting, like in, like on a weekend when I don't have anything going on. And after that, I downloaded, Horizon Zero Dawn, the Frozen Wild. So I downloaded that. That's a game that I'm afraid of now because I haven't played that game in over a year. And I have to get used to that again, like that muscle memory on the joystick. I got to get used to that. So I'm pretty scared of that game because I think that's in my gaming life. The Last of Us gave me the confidence that I can really be a decent gamer. Like, I beat it on whatever the moderate level was. And it gave me the confidence, like, I can finish, like, finish the game, like, finish a story. Like, cause I'm going to talk about my life through in video games. Like, I was always in awe of my older cousin who's like 2 years older than me. Like, he's just like a guy that's just a humble guy that's just good at everything. Pretty much like a really talented dude. And he was really good at video games. And he's kind of like somebody that was so good, you could just like watch him play and beat shit, and it's like you beat it too. It's just like you don't need that experience because he already did it. Like, I think I watched him beat Final Fantasy, like back in the day when we were in high school. But I'm trying to think, like, I never felt like I was as good as him. And I beat a few games and whatnot, but like finishing a game, like Tomb Raider's good and everything like that, but I never really had that big sense of accomplishment until I would say until I beat The Last of Us. So I was like, that was like 30, it's like 33, 34 years ago. That was only 34 years. That was like 3 or 4 years ago when I was like 34. My birthday was on Wednesday of last week. So it was just kind of like, wow, I finished this game, and this game was like, it's a brutal game. It's not easy at all. And it was just like, that gave me confidence. And it's like, well, okay, well, Chris, if you can beat The Last of Us, what can you do with Horizon Zero Dawn, which is like this huge expansive game with these like intense robot, dinosaur, reptilian, crazy thing, like these crazy enemies. And it was just, so I just have to get back into the mode of finishing that game. And I think that's another 20 hours. So that's what I'll be playing for. You'll be probably be hearing my progress on that. Anyway, I guess that's about it for now. I'll bring you over to Tim. So Tim, I wanted to have Tim on again to talk about Annihilation, because he's the guy that when I found out this was happening, this new Alex Garland project was happening, I was like, yeah, because Tim and I were just like, we trade like little articles from IndieWire back and forth, and we share them and stuff and talk about like how it looks. I've been following the cinematographer from the film Rob Hardy for a couple years, in anticipation. He was one of the guys that there was some article that said, oh, here are the 10 or 15 direct DPs that you should follow on Instagram. And Rob Hardy was one of them. And his Instagram is really great. I think it's, let's see. Let me get it for you. Get his Instagram. It's R.D. Hardy. There's one that's a director. Real Rob Hardy is a director, and he directs some episodes of Power. And if you are familiar with the great podcast In the Conversation with Damian Lemon and Ali Muhammad, he was a guest on there last year, and I actually got him confused with Rob Hardy, the cinematographer. Both talented guys, but this one I'm talking about is his Instagram handle is RD Hardy, and his pictures are fantastic. And throughout, you can see not only of his adorable kid baby that he just had, his wife just had, you can see some really good posts related to Annihilation. So yeah, Tim and I know Tim and I were really excited about this movie. I was super excited. So excited about this movie that I did not use my movie pass for this. I went to the elitist AMC dine-in and just paid for it. Also because AMC was offering double points for this. And because I'm a nerd about that, I got my tickets from them. So, yeah, and Tim and I talked about some other shit too before we get to the movie. It's some interesting stuff. So, brace yourself, folks. This is a really good one. Please enjoy my conversation with the great Tim Hall. So you did some adulting yesterday, huh?
I did some adulting yesterday. I went to Pie Place Market to buy some teas. You know, I had some health issues last year with my kidneys, so I've been, you know, doing a lot more healthy stuff. So I went to this tea place and like found some teas and some burdock root that helps with your kidneys, and but you can't drink it straight because it tastes disgusting. It, like, if you smell burdock root, it smells like 7-Eleven nacho cheese that's been out all day.
Okay.
so it stinks. But so I mixed it with like some lemon seed and some dandelion, I think.
Got you.
To sort of cut it. So, you know, you want the stuff you're drinking, you want it to be drinkable and like taste good. You don't want it to taste like dirt. And you know, just because it's healthy, you can still make it taste good. Yeah. So, yeah, I spent way too much money on tea and a new teapot. And so, yeah, that was my adulting yesterday.
Well, it's about your health.
What is it?
It's about your health. So that's
good. Yeah, absolutely. That was my justification. Like, oh, this is for my health, so I'm good.
It's not like you went to Walmart and spent a shit ton of money that you didn't need to spend. It's not like you not like you did that. That's the danger of me going into Walmart every time I go in there.
Yeah. See, I try to avoid Walmart because it's always some chaotic situation. I've never gone in it and not been something crazy. So I said, you know, I've escaped with my life the first few times. Let me just not do that unless I have to. Unless I desperately have to.
It's certain times that you can go in. Like, I like to go early. The earlier you go, the better, because you can just get in and get what you need and get out. If it's late, like sometimes I go in after shows, it could be like 11 o'clock, mm-hmm. it could be 12. It's kind of a nightmare sometimes. It's just like, it's like, why aren't you guys asleep? You know,
why is everyone asleep?
People like teenagers riding around on those carts, like the motorized cart things, whatever. Yeah,
the madhouse.
Yeah, it's pretty brutal. So that's good, man. And you said you just got done watching Spider-Man 3.
Yeah, I was. I don't know why I turned. I was on Sci-Fi Channel. They're running a bunch of bad movies because right now Battle Los Angeles is on.
Okay.
And it was the end of Spider-Man. I was like, let me see if it's as bad as I remember. And it is. It's pretty bad.
What happened?
It's a reminder.
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
It's a reminder that they didn't know how to make those movies.
Yeah.
Like, they didn't really know what to do.
That was Spider-Man 3 was probably one of the biggest disappointments I had when putting something together. Like, when at my job, I was living in Chicago at the time. And I said, hey, guys, let's all go out to see Spider-Man 3.
You were the ringleader.
Yeah, and let's go see it in IMAX. And it was just, like, so disappointing. It was like a bunch of us from work went to it. And it was just kind of like, ah. Like, you could really.
I remember I left early.
Oh, you left?
I left work early to go see it. Yeah, man.
Yeah. It was pretty bad. That's the one where Tobey Maguire was like, he put some gel in his hair, and he was like,
"Yeah,
the symbiote."
He was evil. Yeah, he was evil. Peter Parker dancing around.
Yeah,
doesn't he slap Mary Jane at some point or pushes her down?
Oh wow!
He's got the black suit. Yeah, it's all bad. It never really turns around. I mean, the ending was stupid with the Venom, and you know, not my favorite Spider-Man movie. Probably my least favorite.
I don't know. Like, I liked. I think Homecoming's the best one. Maybe I don't know.
I think so too.
Is that not blasphemy? Is it?
No, not at all. It's a well done movie. It's well written. A cool story. Cool villain.
And not to say that Sam Raimi didn't do a great job with the first two.
Right.
You know, like I enjoyed those. The Andrew Garfield, they were okay. I mean, but it was just I really liked the chemistry he had with Emma Stone. Obviously, they did, or they're still. I don't know what their situation is, but
I thought they dated at some point. I don't know if they still are.
Yeah,
but they did at some point.
But you could tell that connection was palpable, but what they did this one with Tom Holland, it just seemed like they really hit the nail on the head. And the campiness that Spider-Man was supposed to have. One of my friends was telling me it should have been. They should have did that. They should have just had Miles Morales, but I'm guessing that
he'll come at some point.
Yeah, he's coming. Like, we know that Donald Glover's cameo was he's the uncle. What's the guy's name? What's that guy?
His uncle?
Yeah.
Yeah, I forgot his name.
Oh, shit. Let's see.
Miles. After the success of Black Panther, I could see them eyeball the little, you know, light bulbs popping up on their heads, like, oh, we can also do Miles Morales and it'll be profitable and people will come see it and people will show out.
Aaron Davis,
yeah,
because that friend was supposed to be from the Ultimate Spider-Man, right?
Yeah, his the guy in the chair was his name. I forgot his name, but yeah.
Yeah, they had elements of it. So I guess like Donald Glover is supposed to be the Prowler.
What?
Yeah. I saw this guy, I guess he's the guy on a YouTube custom action figure guy. So mm-hmm. That's another world that I've kind of been drawn into.
Those custom action figures are crazy.
Those guys are, it's amazing. Like he made the Iron Spider-Man. He used like a Chadwick Boseman Black Panther head from like Civil War and like gave it a goatee, and it looks like the comic book character. It looks like Aaron Davis, and he gave like the Iron anyway, I'm going off on a tangent, but I was watching this dude's video, and it's amazing what these people can do.
Yeah, I'm not that talented.
No, I could just talk about it. What these guys did is really cool. I can't do that shit.
Hell no.
But yeah, I felt like Homecoming just was really fun. And I really love Zendaya. How do you say it? Zendaya or Zendaya?
Zendaya, I thought. I could be wrong. Yeah, Zendaya.
Somebody corrected me yesterday at lunch, and I was like, okay, I don't know. I don't know which one it is. But she was great.
You don't watch enough Disney, Chris.
I know. She was great, and she was really funny. And I felt like Shuri in Black Panther kind of did the same thing. For Black Panther, which was a little more serious, the stakes were a lot higher. The stakes were high in both, but it just seemed like this one, there was a lot less comedy in Black Panther. But yeah, like I felt like Shuri, Letitia Wright played that role in that movie. What's week one of Black Panther being officially out? How has that been for you? How are you experiencing it?
It's been crazy to see the amount of love and support people have for the film. Mm-hmm. You know, we saw it early and I loved it and I thought it was amazing. But there's, you know, it's a movie that sort of speaks to the things that I like. So I wasn't sure if it was, is this just me that loves it or is it really this amazing film?
Yeah.
So I was happy to see as it rolled out that people were going and having the same reaction. I think this is the first movie where I had people randomly text me as they left the theater about how much they loved the film.
Yeah.
Just random people being like, yo, I just left it. Or just like, I'm getting a bunch of emoji flame from somebody. And I know they just watched Black Panther. so that was cool. And then it ranked it another 100 something this weekend.
Wow.
Like it's got legs and people are going to see it multiple times. My sister is taking my dad to see it today and he's wearing his dashiki. It's just people are into it and they're loving everything about it. So I'm happy about that. And it also was the first big domino for the summer movie. Well, the early summer movie season, you know, Marvel keeps pushing the date up.
Yeah.
So after this,
they start summer so early. Yeah.
Early. So after this, it's, you know, it's A Wrinkle in Time. It's going to be, you know, Pacific Rim Uprising. Mm-hmm. And all that's going to lead into Infinity Wars, which is May, which really kicks off everything. So, you know, I was pretty much just patiently waiting for it to open because I knew it was going to be the first big movie to open and sort of get things started and set the tone for the rest of the year. So now there's an expectation for what these big movies can do.
Yeah, yeah. I'm really... I'm happy that it's doing well. I'm happy that it's, for the most part, there's universal appeal. But as always, when there's something that a lot of people like, there's the think pieces. Are you reading any of them? Are you just staying away?
No.
You're just not.
I'm staying away.
Okay.
Yeah. But good people do it to be, you know, being contrarian is a lifestyle for some people. And they do it just to, you know. Just to get people to click on an article, and you know, I saw this girl tweeting. It was the opening weekend that Black Panther was the worst movie she'd ever seen. She hated it. But I was like, okay, you want people to retweet you and be like, "Oh, my mentions are blowing up." It's just my opinion. Like, how is it the worst movie you've ever seen? That's the worst one you've ever seen, and it was a waste of your time.
Like you've never seen Dude, Where's My Car?
Yeah, right. You never saw Splice. Like none of that stuff. But I get it. I get that you don't like it. But yeah, I think people people love being loud and contrarians about things just for attention on social media, and then complain about people in their mentions, and it's corny. I get it, but it's corny.
Yeah, because a lot of times if you don't like something, you just kind of stay away from it.
That's me.
Yeah, and what I like is just like, I mean, I was out, went to lunch with some comics yesterday, and all black and black actors, black comics, and we were just talking about, you know, the different conversation that you have around the movie is just interesting, and I don't know that I've talked about a film like that with people in quite some time. I can't think of the, you know, with just your average people, like, because the people that I mainly talk to, like guys like you or Rod or other, you know, other people, like, you guys are film people, so like I have that relationship with you, but just like regular people, you don't really have that. And I have like coworkers saying like, man, this made me think about this, and it's like people stopping me. You know, like, they know I'm one of the guys that loves movies at work, but it's been people that you very seldom talk to about things. They're just like, yo, did you see this, man? You know, that whisper, that whisper when you're in the break room or you walk.
That underground railroad whisper you got going on.
Yeah. So, it's really cool. I hope that it continues I don't know that I'm going to see it again. I've seen it twice. I kind of just want to wait until to have an experience that's removed for some time. And then, you know, when I get it on Blu-ray to, you know, enjoy it in that way again. But, yeah.
I want to see that 4-hour cut. That's what I want to see.
They've got to do something. They've got to put
got to put that out, bro.
I don't know what they – like Homecoming – I don't know what they I got the Blu-ray from Redbox, so I'm not sure if they're gonna have like what kind of features they're gonna have on there, but they do have a lot. Homecoming had a lot of deleted scenes from what I can remember.
I think it'll at least
be pretty fun. Like they do different exclusives for different stores, so I mean, I'm not balling like that, so I don't know if I'll be good. I have to make one decision. I'm like, am I getting it at Target or Best Buy or Walmart? So, I think I'm going to give the movie a rest for a while. But it's not like it's something that's not going to stay with me, you know?
Yeah, it's funny when you said that about talking about it. I think it's been a film that I've had really deep conversations with people about for a week.
Yeah.
Just the other day, I was at work, and I ended up crying talking about my trip to Africa in the conversation about Black Panther.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So I went to Africa. I went to Ghana, and with a bunch of students, that we were putting in laptops in different underprivileged areas. But the one thing I remember is seeing a bunch of wealth in like culture and love and community, which is something that we don't necessarily see over here in the States. Mm-hmm. But when we first get there, it's real quick. You get through customs, then we got on our bus and we got to the place we're staying, and one of our hosts was there. I was the only black dude on the trip.
Oh, wow. Shit.
Yeah. So one of the hosts there, so I'm off the bus last. I was checking the bus, make sure we had everything. No one left anything behind. So when I got off the bus, this dude named Sammy greets me with this big smile with his arms outstretched and gives me this hug. And it's like, welcome home. He was like, for everybody, but especially for you. Like, he pulled me aside. I was like, especially for you, I'm glad you came back home. Like, he was genuinely, like, happy to have me back home. Mm-hmm. And I was telling the story. I didn't realize I was crying telling the story. But I remember being so emotionally moved. And this is the first hour I'm in Ghana to have this experience of this dude who's just like, man, I'm so happy you came.
Yeah.
And like wanting more Americans to come back to Africa and see it and see what's here and see it's not this, you know, it's not AIDS and porridge and flies. It's not that. It's, you know.
Yeah, that's what's
up. It's a beautiful country with beautiful people, and I think Black Panther showed a lot of that, even in this you know, fictional country with vibranium and all the other stuff. Just the themes of culture and community and family and dancing and all that. Like that's a real thing.
Yeah.
So it was beautiful to see that.
Now, where do you put this in perspective? Where does it fall for you in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, like as far as ranking?
For me, it's three, but not by much, not okay. far away. Like Avengers is still one for me because I just remember sitting in the theater watching Avengers and not believing they're like I couldn't believe they're actually doing an Avengers movie. Mm-hmm. I couldn't believe it. Like I was still in that scene where they all circle up and Tony asks Cap to call and he's telling everybody what to do. I remember just having goosebumps watching that scene.
Okay.
When he tells Hulk to smash and the Hulk takes off and like destroys the building and like that stuff was dope.
Yeah.
Two would still be Winter Soldier. I mean, that's the movie I've watched the most.
Okay.
I love the action in Winter Soldier a lot. Like there's so many different action set pieces from the opening to, you know, Bucky getting chased down by Cap running through the apartment, breaking through, running through walls to, you know, Fury chasing. All this is a bunch that happens that's really dope. But Black Panther is slightly behind it, but I didn't like the action in Black Panther as much, but I liked the themes in Black Panther more.
Yeah,
more than Winter Soldier. I thought because I've never talked about Winter Soldier this much, other than the action stuff and the clips and the fight choreography when they're in the street. I'm with Winter Soldier. I was just really impressed with Bucky the way he just showed up, like the Terminator, and didn't really have any lines and was just trying to kill people. Like he's trying to kill. He's trying to kill Black Widow. He's trying to murder. Like, it's not even like, oh, she's a woman. I'm going to go easy. No, he's trying to murder her. Like, that's the thing that's happening. And so to see that in the film, like, oh, this dude's really trying to kill her.
Yeah.
Was crazy. But I think, you know, Black Panther's just slightly behind it, not by a lot. But, you know, I'll give Black Panther a few more runs and see how I feel. But Black Panther is definitely the movie I've talked about most with random people more than any of the other movies.
I kind of feel the way about Black Panther the way I feel about black quarterbacks. It's like I have to put it up there, but it's like the my one real gripe is just like the action. It was just so much more than that I really didn't, you know.
I didn't care.
Yeah, I didn't give a shit because it was just like I just felt like. And I've said this before, I felt like it tackled a lot of issues that I think a film like Hunger Games was trying to do. It was another film that was, you know, adapted from a series of novels. But I just felt like Ryan Coogler really nailed, like, this is a political thriller. This is action.
Right.
And this is all this rolled into one. And it made me think about how efficient it was. You know, obviously, like the last third of the movie with the fights and everything is chaos, and that's what Marvel movies tend to be towards the end anyway. Like, you know, so that the end there's just all this fighting and whatnot, but I just felt like he tackled like it might be Black Star Wars.
It might be. It really set up. I mean, how strong the women were in the film, how important they were to T'Challa and to Wakanda as a nation. All that stuff was not, you know, by accident. Like they really put their thought into making the film and writing a story and having dialogue that felt very grounded. But Coogler did the same thing with Creed. I thought Creed could have easily been this big blockbuster, sort of like puffy film about a boxer, but instead it was a really grounded story about Adonis trying to, you know, struggling with his identity as a person.
Yeah.
And he has that line at the end when he's in the corner before he comes out in the last round, and he wants to know make sure that he's not a mistake.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that's been driving him the whole time. You're like, oh, that's the thing that's been behind him the whole time.
Yeah.
He feels sort of like abandoned, like, okay, that makes sense. And then he goes out and he loses the last round. And that was dope. Like, so Coogler has a way of really, really doing that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and it's still grounded in some sort of reality. Like where there's a comedian, a DC area comedian, Jimmy Merritt, who said that, you know, will people try to come to these comparisons to Black Panther versus the Dark Knight? And he said this, and I agree with this because I've been saying this for a while. The Dark Knight is a great film. It's grounded in the reality to where it's basically a crime drama, and it's basically Heat. Except your lead guy, the hero, is dressing up in a bat costume, and it's like, you know, like they filmed it in Chicago, and it's just rooted in this reality. But what you lose when you do something like that, it's just like you're trying to, it's like the more you move away from the narrative of the comic book, you kind of lose the sense of like the wonder and just that X factor. I'm like kind of parsing his words. Giving you
a big there's a fantasy element that people expect when they see these films. Right. And the more grounded you are, the more you move away from the fantasy.
Yeah. And then, like, I just felt like Coogler married the two very well. Like, he's like, okay, this is a comic book movie, but we're gonna have these real social issues to talk about. People are gonna be teaching this shit in school, and it's the same
thing. Oh, yeah.
And I just thought it was executed a lot better than The Last Jedi. When you come to all those themes that it brought out, like, well, I don't know, a lot of people didn't like The Last Jedi, but I enjoyed it. But it just makes me, it's just a credit to Coogler the way that he handles these films. Like it's about fathers and sons. It's about family. It's about politics. And when you, like, there's elements of a lot of things in it, and it just, he's just really good at his job. I just said, he's like, you know, he's 3 for 3, you know?
Yeah. The one thing that, you know, that stood out to me was in the movie were the two ancestral plane visits towards the end, one that T'Challa has and the one that Killmonger has. And starkly different. Mm-hmm. Where Killmonger is very, you know, the kid for him isn't crying, but the adult is crying. The adult Killmonger is crying. And the kid is, and his dad talking to him about why he's not crying. He's like, everybody dies. And he tells him, well, he's failed him. And then you go to T'Challa, who, you know, was recently almost damn near murdered by Killmonger.
Yeah.
Shows up, and he's upset that they left him behind.
Right.
That's his frustration. After he almost died, he's like, what are you guys doing? This isn't the way. Like, I thought that was really impactful, the way they sort of put those two side by side. But yeah, there's a lot of stuff like that in the whole movie. Like you said, I'm sure they'll be teaching it in classes and having philosophical conversations about Killmonger. Like, I'm reading a book now called X-Men and Philosophy.
Okay.
That's all about the philosophy based around X-Men characters and them being mutants and the civil rights struggle they have.
Yeah. There's always like, it's
mind reading and invasion of privacy.
Mm-hmm.
Do mutants have human rights? How many identities can a person have? All that's in there. It's fascinating.
Yeah, man. I think it's hard, like, to really call Black Panther what it is, because we're in it now. Like, we're in the moment, and I think we definitely need some distance, but I think as people, as podcasters, as black people, I think, you know, it would be a disservice if we didn't try to grapple with what's going on. We know that it's something. We know that it's it has cultural significance, and I think it's cool that we're you know, trying to figure out what it is. But I think it's definitely, I mean, if we just, because we label things in the United States and in our culture, that shit is Black Star Wars, and and so, like, it's definitely something special. Like, I even wanted to get one of those, the Black Panther bracelets that T'Challa has with the beads.
Oh, those beads are dope. Yeah,
they're like $100. So you won't
see what?
Yeah, I think they're like, the prices are going up on eBay.
hell no.
I saw someone on Instagram that I follow that had him. I don't know how much he paid for him, but it's pretty cool. I don't even wear jewelry, but I would get one of those. You know, I thought it was pretty cool. So I wanted to just get your thoughts, because you're the movie guy on that. You know, I want you're my comic book film critic expert, and I just wanted to pick your brain. We had Aisha Harris on last week, and I always love having her on. But
yeah, I listened to that. That was a good episode.
Yeah, she's not a nerd like us, so you know. So it was, but she's great, and I always love her take on stuff too. I guess did we want to talk about Monique?
I want to know what you thought as a comic, like what were your, because I don't know if I missed you talking about it on the show.
I was like,
what
is
wrong with Chris think?
Well,
I
think I'm tired of it now. I think the way she went, like I felt like maybe it could have been behind closed doors. They could have talked about it, but, what I don't like is the fact that they're trying to tear this woman's career down, and like trying to measure her, the constant, well, you didn't do as much as Amy Schumer, you didn't do with Chappelle and Chris Rock. Well, Chappelle, Schumer, and Rock do not have an Oscar. If you pull up the stats, they don't have that, which is one of the most, if not the most prestigious award in show business. Monique's got one of them, regardless of what you think about her. I think it's something like the way that the rumors about her behavior on set is partly why she's been blackballed. What she said about she came at Oprah, she came at Will Packer, who is quickly becoming, like within the last five to 10 years, a mogul, and he's on his way. If he's not one yet, he's on his way to doing that. And she had shit to say about him. Even Will Packer said, I saw something on the Shade Room on Instagram, to where someone said something about Monique, and he quoted the tweet and said, yeah, there's issues, but I'm not going to tear down a black woman on social media. Like coming from the Breakfast Club interview, where it was just like, well, like Charlamagne's like, yo, you didn't do this, and this. Like Chris Rock and Dave Chappelle, blah, blah, blah. Regardless of if Monique is your taste or not, like it's just getting to the point where it's like, I'm done, man. Like, yo, like this woman she's accomplished a lot in show business. She's 50 years old. She's done movies. She's done concert tours that have sold out, you know. And I think, is she worth more than $500K? Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think it's a hodgepodge of, yes, she's talented enough, but then that behavior is also an issue, too.
I'm with you 100%.
She's fighting with Whoopi Goldberg on The View, young. Like, what?
Yeah.
Like, Whoopi's got the EGOT.
Yeah.
Now, all the shit that Whoopi went through, like, so you going, like they say, Viola Davis, you know, she's been talking about it. Like, these, you know, they call me the black Meryl Streep, but I'm not getting paid what Meryl Streep is getting paid.
Right.
Like, Monique said it. Viola said it. Like, yo, there's some truth to this. But I think the vessel it's coming out of, people don't really have much respect for anymore, or they just kind of, they don't like Monique.
I think that what she carries herself, right or wrong, right, her husband is her manager, her behavior on sets allows people to dismiss the bigger issue of racial inequality and gender dynamics and gender inequality in Hollywood, especially with black women, as just being about her specifically.
Yeah.
But I think in this situation with Monique, I think all of this is true. I think she deserves more money than what they offered her. I think she is problematic on set. I think she has an attitude that doesn't necessarily brush well with a lot of people. I think there's some bad business happening between her and her manager and the studios. And I think she's worth more than what they offered her. And I think Netflix has to look at how they value black women comedians and people as a whole, how they value them.
Yeah, there's a,
and figure that out. Whatever the number is, it might not be 13 million. But whatever the number is, it's not 500,000.
No, it's not. Definitely not. Not for
it's not that. I think it's a lot. Yeah, but you know how it is on social media. People want to pick sides. I don't think it's as easy as like picking a side.
Yeah,
you can say that Monique isn't worth whatever amount she's worth, and also say, yeah, but we need to really look at how our black women are treated in Hollywood, how they're always lowballed and getting paid less.
Yeah. There's a guy on Twitter. His name is, he's a lawyer in arts, media, and film. And his name is Kyle AB. That's what his, I don't know if you follow him, but he had a thread. I'll just read it.
Oh, I saw that.
Oh, you saw it. Okay. I'll read for the listeners. I will, just go through it, and maybe we'll see where we get when we're done with it. But I thought he made a lot of sense too. He says that Monique Breakfast Club interview is honestly captivating, and I think my initial read on her was wrong. One, it's extremely easy to miss, but it sounds like she says the 500K included a tail and a non-compete. Those things can straight fuck you up. A tail is a provision that dangles on after the term of the agreement has ended. An agreement could be for 1 year with a 2-year tail that restricts you from doing certain things. Monique said she'd be restricted from making any other special during that tail. Marvel Writers Program has a tail that is drafted as a LROR, a last right of refusal for 2 years, 24 months. This LROR is if you make anything dope after this and someone wants to buy it, we'll bid. But at the end, you're required to sell it to us. Wow. And there's a picture of this. It's in my like.
Yeah.
I will tweet this out. For me, it really does reframe the 500K. No clue why Monique would listen to me, but this would have been my number 1, 2, 3, and 4 talking point. I keep hitting every 30 seconds. That 500K with a 2-year tail fast starts to look like $166,066 for 3 years. Now that I think of it, I really haven't heard from Amy Schumer in a whole minute, and it honestly makes me think if she's waiting until her tail runs out. It's easier to sit. It's easier to sit in timeout with 13 million than it is to sit in timeout with 500K. Two, whether you think Monique is worth it, whether you think she should shut up and play ball, whether you think she should be more friendly, whether you think she's not relevant, you can think 500K plus a tail versus 13 million makes sense. Not when Netflix is wedding rice. What the fuck? Not when thinking Netflix is wedding ricing's bags, whatever the fuck that means. It's talking about like they paid 90 mil for Will Smith for Bright, 3 million for the Scrubs, and all that. So it's in three. She's condescending and has a chip on her shoulder the size of a manhole cover. But she legit has been blackballed in an industry where some white men are notoriously difficult to work with and succeeded regardless, if not because of that. Four, I felt uncomfortable every time she called her husband daddy in a non-ironic, non-sexual way. But, hey, I'm not in the business of regulating folks' relationships, but got to be honest here. Okay, this is a good one here. Five, one of the interviews I think most about is Jay-Z's Breakfast Club interview, where he explained Kanye and essentially says, Kanye is like the cowboy in the old movies, the one that runs over the hill and gets shot by a bunch of Indians with arrows and then comes back. He comes back staggering with arrows sticking out of him all crazy, and he says, there are a lot of fucking Indians over there, and now we know. Monique's own story might not end in a win. There's a palpable sense that interviewers just want to squish her, exactly, true. But there will soon be someone who wins these streaming services in such a colossal way, and a good bit will be due to Monique going over the hill first, and he has a gif of Tiffany Haddish. P.S.
Yeah.
It was resume, then relevancy, then Netflix not being focused on comedy when she was relevant. Then it was Tiffany Haddish could get a big amount someday. But if you don't like Tiffany, it'll be relax. She only did one cool movie. And it's a gif of a goalpost being moved. So that's what Charlamagne kept doing to her. Ultimately, Monique. Ultimately, I'm not sure how much it was a correct dollar amount, but at the end of the day, let there be no confusion that Netflix got a machine in their basement that just prints out money when they feel like it. Gave Ryan Murphy $300 million to do whatever, I guess. So that was from Kyle A.B., who's an entertainment lawyer.
But here's the thing you're going to run into constantly in Hollywood, right? You got producers and studios who want to pay people the least amount as possible and make as much profit as they can. Mm-hmm. And you got people who want to make as much money as possible and be in as much dope stuff as they can. Right. So there's always going to be a constant conflict when those two ideas meet together to make a project. So you're going to have more situations like this. I was listening to J.K. Simmons in a podcast talking about when he did Whiplash, and the same thing Monique said, where he didn't want to travel with this movie.
Right.
I don't want to spend time with my family. I don't want to be on this award circuit. And they're like, yeah, we think you might win. He was like, eh, I don't want to go to all these festivals because he wanted to spend time with his family. So they agreed to send his family with him.
Okay.
So he spent a year traveling with his family with the movie. And that was a compromise. But that's, you know, it's a constant thing. Like, people, there's things and favors asked of people. And I'm sure you see this in comedy.
Yeah.
There's a way to go about doing business that's sort of been the way people do it, that's kind of unspoken courtesy that people do.
Yes.
And everyone does it because it's what we do, and it's how we keep the thing. Well, if you need rules, you need order. It reminded me of the Nipsey Hussle interview. Did you watch that?
No, I didn't.
Well, he talked about like going in the county as a Crip, and like, If I'm in a cell with a bunch of bloods, I can't be in there being all disrespectful, calling them slobs and whatever. Like, I'm going to get stomped out. Mm-hmm. So there has to be some sort of order when you're in these places, or else it's chaos. And we're all in the county. We got to get out. And I thought about that in terms of, like, Hollywood. Like, I'm sure people go in a situation, they want to speak out, they want to say things, but there has to be an order for everyone to succeed and survive this project and get out.
Yeah.
And, you know, Monique is someone who's disrupting that order. Right or wrong, she's, you know.
Yeah.
She's saying stuff, you know, and she's, you know, in her interviews talking about issues and black women, how and black women's treatment, things that we know to be true. But also her behavior can also be true. Like,
right.
I don't think it's one or the other. They can both be very true.
Yeah. And I think there's the rub in that, like, we don't like who it's coming from. And it's just like, yeah. I mean, hell, Gabrielle Union talked about her, you know, when, you know, the Me Too movement started, the Weinstein stuff, she was saying, like, people, it's good that this is coming out, but, you know, black women talk about this, and this is really, for the most part, a white woman's movement. And, you know, and it's like, those are the people that are getting exposed. And we know who, you know, Weinstein has spoken out against. When Lupita says something, he's like, shut up, I ain't say that. And I ain't do that to you. And then when Salma Hayek, you know, was like, told her story, it was that he, you know, had a rebuttal on deck for her. But these white women, he didn't, you know.
Right.
Heather Graham was talking about Harvey on her when she was on WTF, you know. She was saying, yeah, you know, guys have, you know, people have done this, but It's the nature of the beat. Like, you just kind of dealt with it because you wanted to do your art, and they take advantage of that, you know? Like, it's just like the way...
Yeah, it's a dream job, literally.
It's people's dreams, and they play on that. They know that people want this stuff. They know that people want to practice their art. They know that people want to... I mean, their craft and whatnot, but... So it's just like, you got to draw that line. I mean, the last 15 minutes of Dave Chappelle's special was about that, that bird revelation. You know, it's a dirty game, man. I just don't like the Monique slander. My mother's a black woman. You know, it's just kind of played, man. And
this is might be a tipping point for a lot of people, but we've seen it over the last 4 or 5 years, especially on social media, especially from black men, their absolute disdain for black women and black women's accomplishment and what they do and what they bring to the table. It's disgusting at this point.
Yeah, because I don't want to be like all high and mighty and stuff like that, but it's just like, okay, like, what are we getting out of the donkey of the day? What are we getting out of like her even coming back on there? But I know she's trying to defend herself, but I don't know. Like,
yeah,
maybe she goes and does her own special and she'll do a special. And I think
here's the problem with that. It has to be hot fire because people are going to try to pick it apart.
Well, we pick apart everything.
See, she wasn't worth that. That's people. They got those pieces already written, just waiting to plug in the dates and the jokes, mm-hmm. and hit publish. They're waiting, you know, because she's been so outspoken. They're waiting for a reason to be like to look at her and say, "You didn't deserve what you said you deserve." Because look at this.
It's gonna get
it'll be interesting to see what happens.
It's gonna get them hits, you know.
Yep.
I wanted to say something about it. I wouldn't if I was going through something like that, I wouldn't put it out there like that. But
no, me personally, I would not either.
Yeah.
But
I want to shift gears a little bit because I wanted to get your thoughts on Netflix releasing just movies coming out straight to Netflix. And why, when these seem to be just decent movies where you just be like, that's pretty good. I was entertained as I was watching this. And your thoughts on why the reviews are so low, why the Rotten Tomatoes numbers are so low. Not that I use them. I like to look at them to see, you know, where people are ranking them. It doesn't affect whether I'm going to see the film or not, but I just wanted your thoughts on, like, because the Cloverfield Paradox came out Super Bowl night, right after the Super Bowl,
mm-hmm.
and it was a big deal. It was like, the Cloverfield's coming right after the game, motherfuckers. And, you know, mm-hmm. and I thought that was pretty neat. And you get Gugu and Botha Raw top-lining a movie. And I'm just like, all right, I'm in. I don't care what the movie is. I just know she's in
right.
it. What do you think about this? Are they being too harsh? Are critics being too harsh because the critics don't get to see these movies before they drop, or what?
There are some of my critic friends who feel like every movie needs to be seen in the movie theater, mm-hmm. and that's it. Like, that's how they should be seen. They shouldn't be direct to DVD or direct to Netflix, whatever. And my thing is like, look, that's where we're headed as a culture.
Right.
Where people are watching things at home. I don't think it takes away from, do I want to see Black Panther on a big screen? Absolutely. Is it ruining my enjoyment of the film if I see it at home? Probably not. Mm-hmm. I mean, theaters were created during a time where we didn't have 67-inch flat screen televisions and HD and all of that. Like,
right.
That was the time. We didn't have any of that. We couldn't watch HD stuff literally streaming on my phone instantly. We didn't have any of that. And it was the one place you could go to see something in high quality and high sound. But that's changed. That's changed over the last 10, 15 years. And so you can watch stuff at home and have a similar effect. It may not be, you know, most people can't tell the difference between, like, you know, when they're watching something that's in, you know, some super high Dolby surround sound in the theater, or if they're watching something that's in a regular theater, like, most people can't tell if it's an IMAX or fake IMAX or whatever.
Yeah.
Most people can't tell. But, you know, I think the way we're headed, that's just how we're consuming films. And I think it's an easy win for Netflix because, you know, a lot of people watch Bright. And some people hated it, but a lot of people watched it. A lot of people watched Cloverfield. And that's the whole thing. Like, can we get people to click on and watch? Mm-hmm. And it's working whether we like the model or not. And I think the concept of theaters, quote unquote, going away, a theater experience, rubs people the wrong way. They feel like they're traditionalists and you have to view a movie that way. And I'm not that way. I'll watch a movie however way I can watch it.
Yeah.
I'm more concerned with the content than the way in which I'm receiving it. But it does matter to some people, and I'm not sure why.
Well, the nerd in me, like, I already had MoviePass. I've had it for about a month now, and it just...
How you like it?
I like it a lot, but, you know, I haven't really gotten to use it in the way that I would like to because the movies haven't been that great. Like, when Black Panther came out last week, I mean, that's that was like, okay, now this is the start. So now we're, like, this week we're going to get Death Wish. We're going to get, well, Game Night's already out. I haven't seen that. We got Annihilation, which we're going to talk about soon. The season is starting where it's like movies that I'll give more of a shot. One of my cousin messaged me, and my hating ass cousin. He said, I was like, oh man. He's like, yeah. He saw that I did the Facebook check in to Annihilation, and he was like, I was disappointed. And he was like, Peter Rabbit was better. I liked Peter Rabbit. And I was like, what? I was like, come on, man. So that's a guy that's really using his Easy Pass, like a 39-year-old dude going to see Peter. I'm not mad at him, you know.
Right.
Rose Byrne's in it, you know, so shit. You know, yeah. can't be too mad at it. I haven't really...
Well, Netflix, you...
Go ahead.
I said, well, Netflix, you remember when they started doing TV shows?
Yeah.
And it was all these complaints about, like, who's going to want you to drop them the whole season at the same time? Mm-hmm. It's going to ruin it. People are going to spoil it. No one wants to consume their television that way. And here we are. We got people taking off of work the day Stranger Things drops just to watch the whole season.
Yeah.
Right. So they've been in the forefront of revolutionizing the way our media is consumed.
Mm-hmm.
And there's always naysayers because they're used to being those gatekeepers, right? There's a pushback because it's hard for shows to sell advertising because that's how they make their money, right? I've got a show like Lost as a hit, and so when it's at its peak during season three, you know, I'm charging advertisers all kind of bags just to get their advertisement during one of the best shows on television, right? The most highly rated shows.
Mm-hmm.
But when you sort of take that away and say we don't need to do that anymore. You're sort of taking food off their plate, and so there's always going to be a pushback that you're taking something from them.
Yeah.
I remember Aziz Ansari talking about pitching Master of None, and he said everyone was interested in a Master of None story. But you know how Hollywood goes, right? It's like a pilot you shoot, and you go to upfronts, and you hopefully someone buys it, and then you hopefully shoot six episodes and see how that goes and check the ratings and maybe do a full season. Right? It's this whole, like, uneasy, you don't know where your show's going, right?
Yeah.
But he said when he went to Netflix, Netflix was like, yeah, cool, we'll do 10 episodes.
Yeah.
Which, as a creator, and for creatives, is ideal. I get to tell this overarching story for 10 episodes.
Right.
And be done. And maybe it's a season two, but I can finish this story and tell it and shoot it. And so that allows me to get talent. That allows me to get people who are more talented. They're not stuck on some, you know, shooting most of the year for one season. We can just knock it all out right now.
Yeah.
And there's beauty in that. And I think people who are used to making money the other way, because it's worked so well, are always going to push back against something that sort of blocks out those gatekeepers. Like, mm-hmm. They're not necessary.
Yeah.
I don't need you.
I don't need you, Dad. I mean,
yeah, I'm real. Like, I don't need you. I'm gonna go to Netflix and shoot this. Like, I don't need you.
Yeah, I enjoy them both, man. I'll go to a movie, and then when I get home, I'll turn on Netflix. There's a thing that, you know, I'm kind of a nerd. Like with I am a nerd about, like, movie theaters and stuff, and I love it. But I know with Annihilation, I wanted to see it at an AMC dine-in because it was a movie that I was excited about. I knew that there were, like, I have two movie theaters within a 5-mile radius of me. There's one where they're both AMCs. Now there's one that has been around for quite some time, and they have not renovated their seats. And it's not like, you know, it's not like the reclining seats and whatnot. I've kind of gotten used to those now. And they're charging.
You become a theater snob.
Yeah, I think I've been that way for. I've been called that, like, years before. Now, you know, years ago. But, like, and then so I knew that the AMC dine-in was like $15, $16. And I was like, you know what? Even though I have MoviePass, I want to see it in this way. I want to experience it with, right. You know, little did I know that there was a, I don't know if there was a married couple sitting next to me. They were, I don't know if they were white or Latino or Latinx, whatever, but they were in some type of argument where one of their kids was messing up and they wouldn't let him go to GameStop. And I guess the babysitter was trying to get them to tell him to, like, that, get the parents to say that, hey, you're not going to GameStop. You can't get a new headset. And then this couple was mad about, like, some clients that they had. And the wife was upset about, like, them losing money on some type of investment. And this was all going on during the previews. And I was like, oh, my God, this is intense. And they brought in Cheesecake Factory to the AMC Dine-In. I thought I was doing something by sneaking in Reese's Peanut Butter Cup eggs.
They brought in a whole meal.
Yeah, they was eating in the, I was like, damn. And they were arguing. And then they were, like, I missed, like, the first, I didn't miss, like, there were parts that I wanted that were kind of choppy because of their argument. And this is in the nice, swanky movie theater. And so my experience was, I was kind of like, the first, like, 5 minutes of it. But it was just a weird interaction in a theater. But anyway, like, I wanted to go, like, I had movie pass, but I was still willing to pay to experience the movie in that way. But I think I'm really going to give it some burn starting this weekend, this coming week.
Okay, what are you saying this week?
I want to see Game Night. Maybe I'll see Game Night. Red Sparrow, I'm pretty excited about now. Like, I'm like, you know, it should be like a fun action movie.
Red Sparrow, I really enjoyed it.
You saw it?
I saw it. I saw it last week. I enjoyed it. It's not the Black Widow movie people think it is. It's a really interesting story. It's got some plot twists.
Okay.
But well done. And she's good in it.
Yeah, I like Jennifer J Law, Jennifer Lawrence.
But it's super violent for people. It's violent. Okay. It goes there. Yeah.
Nice. I like her. I think when she gets older, when she starts to, like, really look like an adult, I think she's getting there. But, like, my only gripe with her is just the cat. Like, she gets cast too old sometimes.
Right.
A lot, really.
Yeah, she's appropriately cast in this one as a young woman. So,
yeah,
it works.
I'm excited about that. So that's good to hear that you like that. And then, you know, we got Death Wish, which could be kind of fun, you know.
Yeah.
So we'll see. It's starting to just... I'm just hoping that this year just we'll have these entertaining movies, you know? That's kind of what I'm hoping for. So yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. Now also I wanted to see what you thought about. Now so they're hating, so you just think, like, basically like Netflix is taking food off these critics' plate to where they can't, to where they feel like they're losing power. And then,
yeah.
And do you think that's why the reviews are kind of shitty? Because we talked about before, like Cloverfield Paradox, 17%, which I thought was a fun movie that I want to watch again, only because my attention was elsewhere. It's not because the movie was bad. But do you think spoiler for Cloverfield Paradox? If you haven't seen it, maybe fast forward for 2 minutes. Do you now, was that monster at the end? That's not the same movie, same monster from the 2008 film, is it?
No, it's a different monster.
That's a different, bigger fucker, yeah. Right?
Right.
God, that was huge.
So I think in the movie, it was huge. I think in the movie, when they set off the Parco accelerator,
mm-hmm.
what they created was three different separate timelines, right?
Yeah.
So we get the monster from the first movie, mm-hmm. we get the alien invasion in the second movie, and we get whatever Earth they're on in this movie. I think it's looking at three different Earths,
yeah,
three different dimensions. But the particle accelerator thing opened the gateway to all of them, so all these things are bleeding in together.
Jeez, yeah.
That's what I think we're watching.
Okay.
And so when people are watching, they wanted to see chronologically how it's set up. I'm like, no, I don't think it's that. I think, because the guy says at the beginning that the scientist who wrote the book that talks about, like, past and present and future and other dimensions and demons, and, like, you don't know what you're doing. And I think So the new one they're doing, the fourth one, that's all that's done shooting, takes place in during World War II.
Yeah.
So I think they've sort of cracked open this sort of space time and weird things are happening in different timelines in different dimensions, and that's what we're watching.
Okay. Yeah, I enjoyed it. I was entertaining, but I need to see it again. But I got mad because they gave it a 17%.
Yeah, it's not that bad.
No.
You could not like it, but it's not 17% bad.
Yeah. And then Irreplaceable You, which I watched.
Mainly, I hadn't watched that yet.
Because I texted you and I was like, is this... Is she like... See, you haven't seen it, but like my fear as I was watching it was like, is she like low-key a magical Negro in this?
Yeah.
And it's like, so this one got a 29%. I don't think it's that bad. Like, Variety says, Nick Shager from Variety says, the fatal amour drama that ensues is too ludicrous to elicit tears. Emily Yoshida, who I like, it's hard not to feel like a lab rat as you go through the film's motions, like someone is studying your every reaction to the prepared succession of stimuli. That sounds really smart. That I don't think it needs to be that. Yeah, man. Let's see. Meant as a touching and tender love story, the original movie, unoriginal movie, simply presents pretty people who are happy, pretty people who get sad, and some quirky features.
That's pretty good.
That's from Renee Schoenfeld from Common Sense Media. Huh, that's funny. Common Sense Media. Well, yeah, man, it was all right. It was just like, I would have liked to have been like Brian. One of my goals is to be like the friend in a rom-com.
Like, he's a friend of the struggling husband.
Yeah, he's a friend of the husband. Just like Brian Tyree Henry, Paperboy, is the friend in the movie. That guy's taking all the work now. He's taking all He's in my favorite play called Lobby Hero, and it's opening on Broadway this week. And that play was supposed to be me and my buddy Scott Stanglin. We were supposed to do that, but whatever. You know, I'm tempted to see it. Part of me is like being a hater. It's like, fuck that, I ain't going to see it. But then I kind of do want to see it because it's one of my favorite plays.
Dude is talented, man. He's a talented actor.
Yeah, no, he's very talented. I ain't hating on him, brother. But I think one of my goals is to be, hey man, you need to get your shit together or you're going to lose her. You know, like, I want to be that dude. They gave it.
Yeah, who was that? And the Wilson had that too. What's his name? And the Adam Levine was his name.
Oh shit! What is that? Adam Levine.
What's that movie?
I think I know what you're talking about. You're talking about Adam Devine. You're talking about When We First Met with.
He had a magical Negro on that who told him and a friend who
King Batch.
The
YouTube or Instagram star?
The Vine dude, yeah. He was actually pretty solid in it.
He's a good actor. Like, I was trying to hate on him, but, like, in this movie, like, he was good. He was really good. Yeah, he's in something else, like, another, I think it's, like, Where's the Money or Get Me the Money?
Yeah.
Oh, actually, that got a 36%. It's called Where's the Money?
Yeah.
Okay.
Where's the Money, I think.
Yeah, he seems like he'll be around for a while. Like he's actually good.
That's your role. He's playing the friend.
Yeah, I could be his when he does the lead in a rom com. I could be his. Hey man, get your shit together. Or you're gonna lose her.
He could be his buddy in the office. Who's principal?
Dude, that's the best. That's a good. It's a solid movie, man. So it seems like they are kind of going too hard.
It's a solid film.
Yeah, it's fine. It's like it does its job. You know, I don't know, man. Yeah, that's.
Yeah, I was entertained for 90 minutes and it was fine. It was like a poor man's About Time, which is one of my favorite movies.
Yeah, it was a very poor man's About Time. Like that movie kind of transcended the genre, I would say.
Yes.
And while we're on these romance movies, I watched, and I texted you, I watched Like Crazy again, and I hadn't
seen it.
Dude, I haven't seen that movie in like 6 or 7 years, but something kind of, I don't know what it was. I think it might have been, Newness. I saw that film, and it's by the same director, Drake Dormus. And I was like, oh yeah, this guy did. It was like Dark, and it was like 500 Days of Summer without the gloss.
Yeah.
And it's like a grittier version. And then so I was like, oh, I need to see Like Crazy. And it wasn't playing anywhere. It wasn't like I could, you know, you could get it digitally. You can get anything digitally. But I was like, I do remember liking that movie because I got it from Netflix when they were just the disc company. And I was like, you know what? I want to buy the Blu-ray. And I bought the Blu-ray and came to me and I watched it. I was like, God, is this White Love Jones?
It pretty much is. That's a very good description of the movie.
Yeah, like some people were like, oh, that's blasphemy. One of my homegirls was like, oh, that's blasphemy. But it was just like, it was like, ugh. Like, they really went through some shit.
Yeah, we were texting about it, and I was saying that scene when that dude proposed to her.
Yes.
Man, that was hard.
Yeah, yeah.
That was hard to watch, right?
Yeah, that so I mean, I recommend seeing, I don't want to spoil it, but shit, the movie came out 6 years ago. But it's probably a something that's been overlooked, so I would just recommend that people do watch it. And me saying, am I sicing it by calling it White Love Jones?
No.
I don't think I am. Like, you know, like, no. Black movies, Love Jones, we just do shit differently. And that was a time, that was 96, so that was a time where the soundtrack meant so much, too. And
and
sometimes the soundtracks were better than the movies. But this,
oftentimes it overshadowed the movie.
Yeah. But this one, like, they were both great. And it's just like Love Jones, I think that's just, it's a classic film. I don't even know that's, because you can't really call it a rom-com.
No.
Rom-com kind of takes the piss out of a movie like Love Jones and a movie like Crazy. What is what's the other?
I don't know.
What else would you call it though?
Yeah, I guess romantic drama. I guess I don't know. Drama, they're not really comedy. Like, Like Crazy is not really funny.
No, not at all. There's nothing funny about.
You're watching the story. You're like, this is rough. Like when they're at the beginning, when he goes to visit her and back home in the UK, and he asks her, are you sleeping with anybody else? And instead of saying no, she says, I don't want to ruin this vacation.
Like, yo, like, you could just
ask. I said,
like, oh, man. Yeah.
I said, God, dog, man. She told him, I don't want to ruin this vacation. I said, oh, no.
That's what made me like, Felicity Porter. I think that's the first time I really took notice of her.
Oh, Felicity Jones? Yeah.
Felicity Jones.
Yeah.
God damn, that's a tank. Felicity. Who's Felicity Porter? Is that even a
person? Sounds like a reporter somewhere. Weather lady.
I'm going to Google. Who is that? Felicity Porter. Oh, shit. It's fucking Carrie It's Carrie Russell's character from Felicity. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, one of my favorite coming-of-age TV shows.
There you go. Comes full circle.
That's fucking hilarious. Felicity Jones.
I remember interviewing Felicity Jones for this movie. It was supposed to be her and the late Anton Yelchin.
Yeah, R.I.P.
He got sick and he couldn't. He was really talented, man. Like,
yeah.
I think he was just, people were just starting to notice him because he just did Green Room and that was fantastic. And then he passed. Anyway, so she was here, man. And we talked a lot about, so with technology now, what's the more present relationship, right? Mm-hmm. So if you're with a girl and then you got someone overseas and you're texting and talking and FaceTiming her, but you're physically with somebody, what's the more present relationship you're in? So we had this whole discussion about that, because that was sort of the theme to me in the film between all of them, which was like, where are these two people more present at? Is it these relationships that they started since they've been apart, or is it their relationship and their constant communication and conversation?
And what did she say?
But it was good, man. I don't remember what she said. I have to go read the interview again. But she was great.
Yeah.
She was fun, like a lot of fun.
Cool, cool. Yeah, that's yeah. I guess we could call that an underrated gem segment.
Very much so. If you've ever been in a long distance relationship, I would recommend watching it.
Yeah. And the ending's pretty, it's kind of like, okay.
Well, yeah. It's kind of like, well, I hope this goes well.
I will have to remind me to talk about that after we finish, because I don't want to spoil it for anybody. But yeah, that movie was just really, God, I really like that. So I have to watch Equals, the other one he did with Kristen Stewart and Nicholas Hoult. Nicholas Hoult, I think.
I like him.
Yeah, I think Nicholas Hoult is his Michael B. Jordan. You know, as like Ryan Coogler's, you know, using him in a lot of shit. I recommend Newness too. I think I talked about that like a couple weeks ago. So let's get into movies. Let's get into this movie review of Annihilation, which is a film that's based off of Jake Vandermeer's. Is it Jake? Let me make sure I got this shit right. I think it's Jake Vandermeer.
Yeah, Jake Vandermeer. Yeah.
His,
no, is it Jake?
Hold on. Shit. Jeff. Jesus Christ.
Jeff Vandermeer. Jeff, I know it was a J.
Jeff Vandermeer. Jeff Vandermeer's best-selling Southern Reach trilogy. It stars Natalie Portman, Jennifer Jason Leigh, mm-hmm. Gina Rodriguez, Tessa Thompson, Tuva Novotny, and Oscar Isaac. And it's written and directed by Alex Garland, who most recently did Ex Machina. He wrote mm-hmm. and directed Ex Machina and wrote 28 Days Later. Tim, would you like to do the honors of giving an overview of the movie, and then we'll just start breaking it down?
Okay, so it's about the lead character's name is Lena, if I'm correct, right?
Yes.
And her husband returns. When we meet her, she's a professor, and we get the idea that her husband's been away for a while for the military, and they have no idea where he's been. He's been sort of MIA for a year, and most people assume he's dead. Then he returns home, and to her surprise, and then sort of quickly becomes violently ill. And that's when she realizes where he's been, and it's this place that's Area X, a.k.a. the Shimmer, which something landed on Earth at a lighthouse, and it's this like really shimmery looking thing, which gets its name area, and it's expanding. And they've sent, I think, 12 different groups into the Shimmer to figure out what it is, and no one's returned except for her husband. So Lena, along with three other women, decide to enter the Shimmer and figure out what's at the lighthouse and return back. So they head into the Shimmer, and craziness kind of ensues once they get in there.
And what are your, I guess, I mean, we'll get to a point to where we'll spoil it. But I want to, what are your thoughts on this movie? Cause this one, you and I, you were the only other person that I knew that was pretty excited about this. Cause I found out about this movie, maybe what, like 2015, 2016.
Yeah.
Where like I started following Rob Hardy, who was the cinematographer of the film, and you and I would like trade, like text each other and like articles about the movie, and it was something right. Like we knew that this was Alex Garland's next project after Ex Machina, and like so I was super excited. Like next to Black Panther, this was, if Black Panther came out later, this would have been the first movie on my list that I was really hyped for. So what are your thoughts based on that? Like, what are your thoughts on the film, and did it meet or exceed your expectations for, you know, after you saw it?
Well, it kind of met my expectations. I didn't care for Lena trying to figure out what's happened to her husband. I didn't care about any of that. I was more sort of, and I enjoyed like the women in the shimmer and what was happening to them and like who these people were during this journey. But I know you needed some sort of MacGuffin for them to try to go to get to, and I guess that's important, but
right.
I was more interested in like the weird creatures they would see and the weird formations and how things looked. And they were all kind of slowly losing their minds the farther they got into the shimmer and closer they got to the lighthouse.
Mm-hmm.
That was way more fascinating to me. I think the ending is super sci-fi.
Yeah.
Which is going to turn people away because mm-hmm. I'm like, what is this? But as someone who enjoys sci-fi, I was okay with it.
Yeah. Yeah. I would not consider myself, like, I guess I'm just a lover of movies. And in my youth, I would say that I really like sci-fi. Obviously, I love Star Wars and whatnot, but I would not really call myself an expert on the genre. So, like, it got a little Terrence Malick-y. I noticed that while I was watching.
Very good way.
Yeah, I was just like, oh shit! But it was like there was an actual story, so I wasn't I wasn't turned off by that. But
it wasn't like a fever dream.
No. Like, so I was just like, okay, and it did. It met mine too, and I think to your point of it really being interesting when they got to the shimmer. I think that's when things like, because when they first get there. Shit, we're gonna spoil it now. So
okay, this is the spoiler part.
We've talked for an hour and 11 minutes. So we've gotten mm-hmm. you've gotten a full podcast, and now we're talking about this movie. So when they got into the shimmer, like, they get there, and then she's boning a black dude in her dreams, and
yeah.
I was like, yes. And then Natalie Portman is, and then it's like, okay, and she wakes up, and it's like, okay, we've been here 4 days, and I'm like, oh shit, I'm like, okay, like, what is happening here?
Yeah, because they don't remember the 4 days,
right?
None of them do.
None of them remember,
and they're all processing it differently.
Yeah. Now, what do you think that is? Do you think it's because of just their genetics, like their makeup is like they're just. That's causing them to experience things differently?
Yeah, because what we learned later on from Tessa Thompson is that all the DNA in the shimmer is refracting off of everything.
And what does that mean? Explain that to the listeners and me.
It means like you're sort of like you're evolving, and that's mm-hmm. different parts of everything. Plants, animals, other people. It's changing you.
Yeah.
It's changing your makeup. Your cells are changing mm-hmm. slowly.
Yeah.
So they're all starting to look different, and like, doesn't Lanny Portman get a tattoo she didn't have initially?
Yes.
And all this weird stuff. And these animals are sort of hybrid, and it's all kind of really bizarre once they get there. But to me, the best scene was Gina Rodriguez's scene when she sort of clearly has her breakdown.
Now, I had a problem with that scene. She was great. I had a problem with it because my third eye was open, and I hate that. This is called woke Chris segment. Why did a Puerto Rican chick have to have a knife and start flipping out?
She had the knife.
I was like, she was dope. She killed that shit. She was great.
Yeah.
But it was like, part of me was just like, go ahead.
For me, I go back to when they find that video and they're looking at the dude's intestines move around like snakes. And she's the one person who's like, it's a camera trick. This isn't, it's lighting. It's not real. And everyone else was like, no, we know what we just saw. She's just like, Nope, not seeing it.
Yeah.
So, and then she notices her hands and her fingerprints are moving.
Mm-hmm.
So she starts freaking out, and her whole monologue, when she has them all tied up, is great.
Yeah. That was great.
And you get the idea she's going to cut them open and see if they're inside the movie.
Yeah.
They're all tied up. Because she's the one badass in the group. And she hears what she thinks is her friend's voice.
Mm-hmm.
And it's clearly not. But the fact that the animal could mimic their dying friend's last
Jesus.
Screams was creepy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It reminded me, you know, and I... if there's got to be a drinking game for this podcast, every time I mention The Last of Us, it definitely, dude, this shit definitely had The Last of Us vibes, where it's just like the mutations, like how these people were being affected, the animals, like it was just like, fuck, this is just like, because like all the, like those spores when they get to that when they're at the base camp. I know you haven't played the game, but like, it's just like, there's, you see people that are like dead, but then you see like this beautiful like color, like the, like whatever the mutation was. It's actually pretty beautiful, but it's weird. Like, it was just like, I love the cinematography.
It's terrifying.
Yeah. It's just like, I don't know if I would have lasted in it. Like, all the, you know.
No, I would have turned around. The moment I realized we'd been there for 3 days, I would have been like, nope.
But what are,
my time, you guys.
Now, I want you to speak on this. What were your thoughts? Because maybe, because I don't know, I missed this, you know, when they were, oh, I guess it would be after the first encounter with the alligator, the mutated alligator. Uh-huh. And they're on the, and they're like going to the next, before they get to the station, like base camp or whatever. Yeah. Like the Tuva Novotny character, she is the survey, the geologist and surveyor.
Mm-hmm.
She's telling Lena about everybody. What was, so the Tessa Thompson character, Josie, she's a physicist, but she cuts herself.
Yeah.
And like, she could just, why, can you go through the character? Do you remember the issues that they had?
She cuts herself and she didn't say much about the woman who was leading it, Jennifer Jason Leigh's character, but we find out later she's dying of cancer.
Right.
And then, Gina Rodriguez was an alcoholic who's recovering.
Yeah.
And she lost her daughter to leukemia.
And poor,
so she's there.
Okay, and Lena is just like trying to figure out what's happening with her husband. So like, because somebody was saying on a review, and I like the person, so I'm not gonna like trash. Shit, some people were saying like, one of the gripes from people, they were saying it didn't match up to the book. And I want to know what you think about, like, I didn't read the book because I didn't know about it until like recently, that it was based on a series. Garland, I listened to a Google talk that he did, and he was saying like, he just kind of took the essence of the first novel and he didn't read the other ones. And people were kind of mad about that. What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, he's making a film. He's not like rewriting a book. If he saw this book and was like, I can take these elements and sort of extrapolate them to this, tell this greater story.
Yeah,
it's loosely based on the book, and hopefully it leads people to go read the book.
Yeah,
then that's fine.
Yeah, because that kind of makes me want to read them.
Yeah, I was with Aaron, Aaron Hunley. Shout out to Aaron, who read the book.
Yeah,
and she said, yeah, it's loosely based on the book. Like, loosely.
Okay.
As far as, like, that's the title, and these women go into the shimmer. It's kind of as far as she went with it. Like, like a lot of stuff, you know. She briefly talked about how the Lena character in the story didn't really care for her husband very much. She didn't really love him like that. Well, she's kind of not a good person.
She cheats on him.
She did cheat on him.
Now, was this while he was away, right?
Yeah, it looked like it was while he was away, and she thought he was dead.
Yeah.
But that conversation was hilarious. The second cheating dream she has, where they're talking about, like, sort of their post-sex conversation.
Yeah, yeah. Shout out to the black guy. I was happy.
Yeah, man, good for him.
I was happy for him with Natalie Portman, because you don't get that little interracial
love. Put that in the movie.
And what I liked about, because I reached out to Hot Firestarter crew, I don't know who responded to me, but I just said, hey, would you guys classify this movie as that shimmer? And I think it might have been Ba, and he said, why not? Loved it. And I was like, yes, So if it get, if yeah. it has if it has
it's,
their,
probably, it's probably Ba who loves
it's,
it.
If it's probably Ba and it's from like I think that our appreciation of this movie is validated, you know? Because if you call it, yo, I saw that Shimmer, young, that shit.
Yeah.
That shit is like, it's flames. Like, because it just like, I don't know. Like, when I left the theater, I just kept thinking about that.
Yeah.
I just kept thinking about that. Now that.
That weird score.
That real, that sci-fi moment. So, it just seemed like those, from a character standpoint, I don't know how much it gets into it with the five characters in the book, but it seemed like they had, what the film led me to believe is that these characters, these five women, really had nothing to lose.
Yeah.
You know, they were all trying to get over, so, well, I lost my kid, and I'm an alcoholic, and I cut myself, I'm fucked up. I need to figure, let's go into the Shimmer, fuck it. You know?
Yeah, so even at the end with Tessa Thompson's character, sort of like, she's clearly the most scared out of everybody.
Yeah.
And you see flowers sort of growing out of her cuts.
Mm-hmm.
And then she essentially turns into a flower person.
Yeah.
She sort of just gives up.
Yeah. Now, is she dead, you know, like, or is she still living through in the show?
I don't know.
That's a weird.
I would put her in my yard. I'd put a Tessa Thompson flower person in my yard.
Well, Janelle Monáe would have a problem with that.
I know. It's, yeah. Good for them.
Yeah, good for them.
Two pretty people together.
Yeah,
good for them. I'm happy for them.
I liked it, man. Like,
I liked Gina Rodriguez at that weight in the movie.
Oh well, that's like, dude, that's like, black dudes don't give a shit.
Yeah, I see her now. I'm like, she's skinny, but like when she showed up in the movie and she had like that good. Wait, I was like, oh man, I don't know why she doesn't walk around like that all the time.
I think maybe it was like a character choice to where she was like, I'm butchy, you know, I'm lesbian, so I'm like just gonna gain weight for it. She was good.
She was good though.
Yeah, like I really dug, like they all played their part. They were it was just on point. Like go ahead.
Once they get to the lighthouse, it does get trippy.
Yes.
When Natalie Portman crawls down that big butthole and has that conversation, and it gets trippy.
Yeah,
it gets trippy. But
that was
for like 10 minutes.
Yeah, that 10 minute sequence, I was like, okay, but I think that
you're all in. You're all in on being a sci-fi at that point,
right? Because and I think we'll say that it was Ba that I had my conversation with on Twitter. Like, he said it had like it reminded him of Arrival, that it was it's like similar in tone, but it just seemed like, now I do want to watch Arrival again, but like Arrival kind of I called Arrival Dangerous Minds with aliens, you know, because it was just like dealing with all that was that my girl what's my girl's name, Amy, I fucked up her name, man. Oh my God, I love her to death. She's a fantastic actress. Amy, she gets shafted all the time. Oh my God, come on, help me out.
Amy Adams?
Amy Adams, thank you. Amy Adams didn't have a leather jacket. Like, that would have been have been the only thing. But I just remember, like, maybe it dragged a little too much. Arrival did.
Arrival?
I guess.
Yeah, because I think you're waiting for... At a certain point, the plot kind of stops moving forward. You're waiting for this resolution with these aliens. And that's when it feels slow.
Right. But this
not that it's bad, but it just feels slower.
Yeah, and it wasn't a bad movie. And actually, was Arrival longer?
It was beautiful, man.
Yeah.
Was such a beautifully shot movie.
Yeah. Well, that's a brother that did that. That's... What is his name? He did a bunch of other things. let me find it. Bradford Young, who did tons of shit. He did Arrival. He did A Most Violent Year, Pawn Sacrifice, Mother. What's this sad? Pariah, he did. Restless City. which before then, I don't know that I've seen black people look as good as they have. Like, when I started noticing that, like really paying attention to it, Restless City, depressing as fuck, but it's a came out like 7 years ago. But I definitely want to go back and watch Arrival again. It's very similar in tone, but it just seemed like there was more. The stakes were. See, now I don't know if I want to say the stakes were higher in Annihilation, because shit, the whole world was gonna end. Like all those, pods. You didn't know what was gonna happen. But just as far like we just know that something was imminent, but we just didn't know what. Tonally those movies are similar, but like we had fucking monsters in the Shimmer, so I guess we'll put it like that.
Yeah,
those raised the stakes a lot. But I didn't really feel the time. I just knew something was imminent. I liked the little act breaks. I was like, you know, the part like the, like Area X. We're in Area X, and now it's the Shimmer.
The Shimmer, then the Lighthouse.
Yeah.
Or Base Camp, whatever,
Yeah, I really dug it. I liked the way the story unfolded. The thing that I can remember is, like, the way that they did Social Network, you know, the interview.
Yeah.
What do you call that style?
I don't know what it's called.
Flashbacks? Yeah. I don't know. Flashbacks or whatever. I don't know, man. What else? Was there anything that you didn't like about, like, anything that you could have, that you thought could have been different or just anything?
Yeah, I didn't care about her trying to find a husband. I wanted to hear more about these women and who they were and their backstory and, you know, their experiences in the Shimmer. That to me was the most intriguing part of the entire movie.
Yeah. I think so too, and like it's part of it. Part of it's like, oh, I like that. Okay, what you've revealed is that these women, these five women, really don't taking Natalie Portman's character out of that. Like none of these, all the rest of these women had really nothing to live for. They were basically looking for something, looking for purpose, and them being in the Shimmer would. You know, doing these things that these fucking men couldn't do, gave them purpose. I liked that, but what would have been interesting to your point was if they did it in the way that like a Lost episode would have been, where it's like you see Gina Rodriguez's character flipping out about
do flashbacks to her,
you do a flashback about her character. Because when you have really good actresses in a movie like this, well, you want to see more of them, and you want to know more about them. So I think that's a testament to the casting I think you're absolutely right. It kind of makes me want to see it again, partly because of the couple that I was sitting next to during the movie. And so with MoviePass, maybe I can do that. Maybe I'll fuck around and see it today. But I don't know.
You got to see Game Night. Game Night was fun.
Yeah, I need to see Game... Like, that's another one where it's like, we need... Like, there has... A lot of these comedies have been kind of disappointing lately.
Game Night is funny. Game Night is legitimately funny.
It looks good.
Jesse Plemons is in it. He's got a really funny role. It's like the neighbor. Kyle Chandler... Jason Bateman, Rich McAdams, you know, they do what they do. And Kylie Bunbury's a star, man. I keep telling people, man, she is a star. The canceled Pitch, which made me mad, but she's got star potential in her. She's in it, yeah.
The lead from Pitch?
Yep. She plays the girl, or the wife of another one of she's one half of another couple. There's something that comes to Game Night.
My man from Lamorne Morris?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's his wife. And they have a pretty funny running joke that takes place in the movie that keeps coming back up.
Oh, that's what's up.
Pretty good, man. Every time I see her, I'm like, man, she could really... I hope that this sort of gives her a bigger audience, because she's good.
Yeah, that was a good show.
It's a good show, yeah.
Yeah, so I'll probably see that. Anything else on Annihilation?
That's it, man. I think if you're really into sci-fi, I think you'll enjoy it.
Yeah.
If you're not a sci-fi fan, you know, the end of the movie might throw you for a loop, but it's worth seeing for the performances and sort of just the exploration through the shimmer that's beautiful and bizarre and intoxicating and sort of crazy every 5 seconds. But yeah, it's worth the watch.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Tim, where can people find you?
People can find me at peoplescriticblog.com. You can find me on Twitter, People's Critic, Snapchat, Instagram. I should be having some interviews coming up very soon, some reviews, so that should be fun.
Cool, man. Dude, this has been great. Stay on the line. We'll close.
All right. But always good talking to you, man.
Yeah, man. You're my guy. You're my film critic guy.
I appreciate it.
I enjoy every time I get to talk to you and check in on you. I always bug Tim. I was like, hey, man, what did you think about like this part?
Listen, man, you're not alone. It happens all the time.
Okay.
I appreciate it.
All right, man. Well, Tim, thanks so much. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. Peace.